Hello and welcome to the Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. My name is Phil Rude. I am the dad.
My name is Austin Rude, and I'm the son. Every week we watch a movie and then we get on mic and we talk about it.
That is what we do. And right. Here we are in doing season that. 7. I think I've been saying season 6 in the lead up to kicking off, and even last week's episode, I'm pretty sure I said season 6, but we are in season 7.
Are we?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't keep track.
We've completed 6 seasons. We are kicking off our 7th season right now.
Okay, so we're not like Community. It's not 6 seasons in a movie.
Nope, this is not our movie. This I mean, is our it is season. Our movie season, but, you know.
They're all movie seasons.
So that's my correction I have to throw out there. I have a second, not correction, but something I wanted to follow up on, our Babylon episode. In the meantime, I happened upon an article about an actress named Anna May Wong from the silent era, and that is who Lady Faye from Babylon is based on. I believe I sent you this article.
You did, yeah.
It's all about this this Chinese-American actress from the silent era and how she was a breakthrough artist and a big success story in a time when a lot of Asian Americans couldn't get into Hollywood, couldn't get into movies. And she is considered the first Asian American movie star out of Hollywood.
I think that's really cool.
I think it's great, yeah.
Like, I loved Lady Faye, and then to find out that she's based on, like, a real person
right.
who had those struggles.
And actually, the trajectory of that character in the movie follows what Anna May Wong did. She did end up going to Europe because she had more freedom there. It was a different world. It was more open.
It makes and more sense, yeah.
More progressive. Then I think she kept finding more stereotypical roles in Hollywood. Anyway, it's in this Britannica article. I'm going to link it in the show notes. If you are interested, if you liked Babylon like we did and loved Lady Faye in that movie, this is really interesting. Apparently also the you know, when she signs the photo of herself for the guy who comes to like her family's laundry.
Yeah.
That's based on Anna May Wong's actual publicity photo.
So
they really like they really it's took inspiration from this real life Asian American hero, you know, trailblazer in Hollywood, mm-hmm. and actually sort of grafted that on the fictional Lady Faye. So I think that's really
so
cool
neat.
that character, as much as I know I loved that character. I thought she was one of the best parts of that movie. But I know we both really talked about how cool she was, and I love that she's actually based on a real person.
It adds another layer to that movie.
For sure.
To make it even better.
And to that movie's portrayal of early Hollywood.
Right. Like,
you know,
it adds to the realism.
It's,
like,
oh,
hey, this...
wow. This, the, you know, it was predominantly, you know, white people, and there was the typical racism we would expect, not stereotyping of actors of color and you know, non-white actors would be cast into more stereotypical roles, but also like, oh, she was sort of legendary in Hollywood at the time. People did love her. People, you know, talked about how great she was, and she really did break through.
And that kind of history, like,
yeah.
kind of swept that under the rug, like, tried to forget.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you don't know a lot of silent movie era. I don't think a
true.
Lot of people
yeah.
do. I don't. I Metropolis and Nosferatu and Charlie Chaplin, you know, stuff like that. But a lot of us don't know. We should watch some silent movies. I'm here.
How we are an audio-based podcast, Dad.
We are. Yes.
How could we possibly? Can
did.
We play clips of the movie?
It's like frantic piano music.
You guys seeing this?
But, yeah, we did Metropolis on Brokeback Mountain one time. Carrie and I reviewed Metropolis, and it's actually a really interesting movie. It's really cool, and it's a surprisingly complicated movie, you know, so there is a lot to talk about in some of that stuff. I think it'd be fun. I think it's an interesting challenge to...
It's one of those things, like, I know probably a lot of really interesting things were made back then.
Yeah.
I've never seeked them out.
Yeah, they're hard to find. They don't stream a lot of them, you know, I will say I've found a couple on Turner Classic Movies on the Max app. You know, they have the TCM section. Yeah. And once in a while, they'll have some silent movies on there. And I've watched a couple of short ones.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah. Anyway, that's not what we watched for this week. But I did want to get that in because, you know, Babylon, it keeps coming back around. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Of course it keeps coming back around.
This week, for our 101st episode, we watched the 1961 animated classic 101 Dalmatians. This is the Disney original, hand-drawn animated. This movie finds Dalmatians Pongo and Perdita, their 15 puppies, and 84 other random pups fighting to escape the henchmen of the eccentric villain Cruella de Vil, who wants to turn them into coats. The movie stars Rod Taylor as Pongo. Our second movie with Rod Taylor. I'll let you guess in a minute. Kate Bauer as Perdita. Betty Lou Gerson as Cruella. Ben Wright as Roger. Lisa Davis as Anita. And J. Pat O'Malley as the Colonel. This movie was directed by Clyde Geronimy. Hamilton Lusk and Wolfgang Reitherman, and was written by Bill Peet, based on the book by Dodi Smith. You want to take a guess what we've seen Rod Taylor in?
I'm trying to think of, like, older movies that we've seen.
Actually, it was his last film, and it's not as old as you think it is.
I really don't know. I can't think of anything.
He played Winston Churchill in Inglourious Basterds in the single scene where we're introduced to Michael Fassbender's character and Mike Myers gives him the briefing and Winston Churchill is just sort of sitting at the piano in the background.
Just in the background?
Yeah. He's okay. Just there and he keeps looking over at him like, oh my God, Winston Churchill's here.
I don't even remember that scene.
It's such a flash in the pan scene, and that's what Tarantino, I think, does so well, is he gets, like, well-known character actors to just come be a background player in a scene, you know, and it's Rod Taylor.
It's kind of a cool cameo.
He did a ton of TV. He did some more animated stuff for Disney. Most of these actors are character actors, British character actors. Did a ton of TV in the 70s, 80s, 60s even. And most of them have done multiple Disney movies.
It's weird because I recognize the name, but I just...
Yeah. I don't know him. Knew the name Rod Taylor, but, you know, I'm not real familiar with a lot of his work, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because I did look at his IMDb. I'm like, oh, weird. I didn't expect that we would have seen any of these actors.
It's a fun connection.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that's the big one there. Let's get right into it. Is this the first time you've seen this movie?
No, I've seen 101 Dalmatians before. I'm more familiar with the live action, like, 1997. Right.
The Glenn Close. Yeah. Cruella de Vil. Yes.
That one.
I never saw those.
I only saw the first one, but that's kind of what 101 Dalmatians is in my memory.
Okay.
And it's very, like, distorted. I don't even remember the plot.
It's like the first Disney live-action remake of
their... Was it?
I mean, it's before this era where they took it and ran with it. It was just sort of, I think, intended to introduce kids to this old movie. But I don't know. Maybe they were just playing with CGI or something. But when you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, that really was sort of the beginning of you know, the runaway train that is Disney live action remakes now.
They got away with it once and they kept on going.
It's that thing of when you realize superhero movies started as long ago as they did. Iron Man wasn't the first one. Like
there was a history before.
There was then. I mean, the X-Men movies are like late 90s.
Yeah.
Very early 2000s. The first Spider-Man movie is very early 2000s. I mean, like, the modern era of superhero movies and of Disney live-action remakes, it sort of, like, started. It didn't take off big until later, but it started way back here.
It wasn't as franchised back
sure.
then.
Sure, yeah.
It's a whole different landscape now.
Disney didn't own all of it back then.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is not that, nor is it Cruella, which I never actually saw.
No.
But I did see this movie when I was really young, and I vaguely just remembered it as boring.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, I kind of lump it in with Mary Poppins, which was also like a...
Ooh.
I'm sorry,
some shade at Mary Poppins. Wow.
As a kid, I was like, this doesn't seem that magical. This park seems kind of boring. This movie's kind of slow.
Wow.
Everyone has this weird way of talking. I didn't know what British people were back then.
I mean, yeah, that's that's fair. That's a fair assessment of the accents in Mary Poppins.
Yeah, but I just was never a fan of that or 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, I would call this one of, like, the lesser known in the Disney canon. You know what I mean?
I mean, people know about
people
it.
People know
sure.
it, but it's not regarded as the same kind of classic that, like, Snow White or Dumbo. Or kind of later era things like The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like this is a weird middle period of Disney movies.
I don't know where it comes in the timeline. It feels very old to me.
It is very old. I mean, 1961, it came out.
Yeah.
So it's after the real early stuff, like Peter Pan. But it's in that era of, let's see, like The Jungle Book. I'm going to say the Aristocats is somewhere around here. Probably the Robin Hood.
It's a lot of drawing animals.
A lot of, yeah, animal protagonists. And also the art style of this era, I think, is probably my favorite of the old Disney. Because this is the era where they start... This is the movie that they started using Xerox machines to animate.
How does that work?
They started, instead of inking every drawing on a cell, they would, like, I guess, boost the contrast on the pencil drawing. So all the lines you're seeing are basically like pencil lines that have been Xeroxed. They're real scratchy. They aren't as steady as like a traditional ink line.
I was going to say, like, it looks very pencil-y.
There's a life to it. That.
Quality.
Yes. I think it's brilliant. I love that they do that.
But it's all still hand-drawn?
It's all still hand-drawn.
Okay.
But they use the Xerox, I think, to... I don't know if they use it to copy parts of the drawing so they didn't have to redraw the whole thing and keep it on model. But also, like, if you notice, especially in the sequences where all the puppies are like going over something or running through the woods, it's walk cycles that are repeated. So they can reuse the same cells layered on top of each other. They're not having to draw 101 walk cycles. You can look on the line and see, like, oh yeah, that dog is walking the same as that dog. That dog's walking the same as this dog over here, just a step behind. You know, they mess with the timing. And then you can find, of course, like, repeated shots and stuff like that. Animation was very expensive, and this is credited as the movie or the technology that saved the Disney Animation Studio when they made this movie.
Because it kind of led to a shortcut.
It was a shortcut. It was faster. It was cheaper. And animating all those dogs separately would be insane. And I think it also helped on this one with all the spots. All the spot patterns had to be the same.
Yeah.
And keeping them on the dog as the dog moved and keeping them on model in the same place, I think it helped with that. It
sounds so frustrating.
I can't imagine. Yes. It's but the art of this movie is beautiful. I think it's partly it is the line quality because I'm a line quality junkie. And I love an interesting line, and I think it does that really well. But also, like, the backgrounds of this movie are drawn in a really unique and sort of mid-century way. And then, like, the big landscapes that are kind of like, they look like gouache paintings that are just sort of like light and shadow shapes of, like, the countryside. And, you know, the forest that they're running through. I think this movie's beautiful. I think this movie is a style of animation that Disney got away from that I think they shouldn't have.
Yeah.
I think this is a great era of Disney animation. And part of it is, like, the era that it was made in. It's a cartoon modern kind of style that is a little bit mod. And a little bit of the mid-century aesthetic that just sort of fell out of fashion, but now it's seen as a very, like, cool retro thing.
It does feel that way. It feels very old-fashioned in a way. But I love the art style because I love how just kind of calming it is. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It feels like watercolor. It feels like all of the color in this movie is, like, soft or kind of muted.
It's not saturated to where it's burning your eyes.
Right. It's gentle.
Right.
And it helps the music as well.
Right.
They both work together in that kind of sense.
It's made it like the perfect time of like the early 60s. I'm talking about like design and like pop culture wise. I know the mid 60s in America was not the greatest time for everybody.
It's a little tense.
Or early 60s. But like, yeah, it is that style, the music that is, it's not quite fully rock and roll yet, but there it's where old school jazzy kind of lounge music and rock and roll were kind of at a, they were crossing over. They were overlapping each other.
It's a little groovy.
And so you still have a lot of the... Like, this era of, like, James Bond movies are... Everybody looks outrageously cool. The music is not modern music. It's very throwback now. But it's fitting of this time. It's just cool. It's odd. Like, you look at it now and it's just like... It's so hip now. You know? It's really odd to look at it through a later lens.
Well, that's everything looking back, like,
sure,
at any era.
But you can look at like some of the early 80s, late 70s stuff and go, oh my God, what was everybody wearing? You know, those wide collars, you know, nothing looks cool there. There's certain eras that I think just don't age well. And I think the early 60s, the aesthetics of animation, of advertising, of, you know, like when they show London in the billboards lighting up, it's old advertising style, you know, like...
But it's lit up in, like, neon
typefaces and neon signs. I'm reading those Parker graphic novels that Darwin Cook made. I've talked about them on here before. And those all take place in the 60s. And the billboards that he... I don't know if he Xeroxes, if he lightboxes old ad copy. And then he draws, like, old diners, old cars. It's just such a... very specific time period for design.
It's making me think of like Incredibles 2. Both the Incredibles movie. Like, that is looking back on that art style. Like, it's kind of emulating the
60s. Very much the mid-century art style. And I have not seen Incredibles 2, but Incredibles 1 is so much more of a James Bond movie, of an early 60s James Bond movie, than it is a superhero movie. Like,
really?
The plot-wise, the whole thing at the beginning when he's in, like, the tuxedo in the car. Yeah. And, like, it's gadgets, it's...
I wouldn't expect that, but secret you're right about agent that.
Stuff, yeah. And government, secret governments and things like that.
There's a lot of hidden bases, yeah. And...
Yeah. It's very much like a Dr. No style of movie.
The whole thing is trying to protect the...
Yeah.
The database of spies,
right? And it's also sort of about the nuclear family and, you know, like the nuclear age of all of this, I think.
I never thought of it like
so
that.
Yeah, I mean, Disney still has roots to this art style. It's just not their mainstream art style now.
They should stick with it.
I think so. I would love to see Disney make a movie in this art style again, hand-drawn. Old aesthetic. I think it would look really cool. And I think there's a lot of people who are around your age or even younger, you know, like real little kids, who've never seen anything like this before. And it would be it's a kind of thing that is so old it could be brand new again.
To a
different generation.
I think people worry that, like, oh, people don't have the attention span for that. But I think people are craving it. Like, the people I know, at least, I hear a lot of people talk about, like, oh, 2D animation would be, like, super cool to go back to.
I mean,
the studios just kind of don't.
Spider-Verse. Look at what Spider-Verse did by just doing something different. Doing something that looks hand-drawn. Doing something that looks flatter. And we were at the theater today. And as we're recording this, the Ninja Turtles movie comes out this weekend. And, like, that looks like a whole different art style. That looks like it's... We talked about it in an earlier episode, how it's kind of chasing the Spider-Man thing. But it's different. It looks like someone drew it with a pencil.
It's still branching out. It's still doing something.
I think there is a craving for it. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see if it goes this far. If it goes this far, I will be... really surprised. But either way, that's the aesthetics of this movie. What did you think about the plot and the execution of this movie?
I mean, I think the plot was kind of basic, but I'm not expecting a whole lot here. I don't know. I enjoyed it though. I thought it was, like, simple, but it did exactly what it needed just to kind of have a fun little adventure.
Sure.
It wasn't too serious. It wasn't too, like, convoluted. The villain, she never, like... I don't know. She didn't hatch some outrageously complex plan.
There's no blue beam going to the sky
exactly.
Thing.
Like, like, it was just like, she wants a fur coat. She's gonna kidnap a bunch of dogs and she's gonna make a coat.
She wants a coat made of dogs.
Right.
It's twisted and bizarre, but it's simple, and the dogs are never, like, really in danger. You know what I mean?
You never feel like, oh, they'll never go that far.
Right.
You know, like,
you don't see a knife ever and stuff like that. No, I agree with you. I think this movie drags in a couple parts, and it pads out. So, like, we don't need to see every dog in the chain of dogs barking all the way out. You know what I mean?
It did get a bit repetitive at times,
And it gets a little bit slow, but all in all, I mean, this movie's only like an hour and 20 minutes, and I think it's like a perfect family movie. Like, it's not super engaging as an adult to watch this movie, but I think this is like a perfect family movie.
But it's very charming.
It's so charming, and it's so adorable. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't love when the puppy climbs up to watch TV? Like, climbs up to the screen and is so, so engaged with TV that even when all the puppies are escaping the bad place, he can't tear himself away from watching TV. And the dog who's always hungry and things like that. It's an adorable movie. It looks great. But yeah, it's, I think the strength of this movie is in the simplicity of the plot. Like, it's just a straightforward plot of a woman wants a dog coat. She steals the dogs and the other dogs go to get them back. That's the it. Whole thing. Yeah. There's no side plots. There's no like real other weird stuff. And it's done in the kid friendly way of having like the bad guys are bumbling morons. So nobody's ever really in danger. These people are just crazy. I think as scary as it gets is when you see Cruella de Vil going like actually crazy and her face is all like distorted and weird, you know? Yeah,
at the end she does go a little demonic.
Yeah. Demonic's a good way to put it.
She's almost an anti-smoking ad.
Oh my god. The smoking in this movie.
There's quite a lot of it. The pipe in the beginning, which is kind of like I don't know, it feels cozy in that, like,
sure,
that whole thing, which is like, ooh, that's a, it's a weird vibe to be putting out, but I get it, it's product of the time.
I mean, yeah, like, I think pipes are such a bygone thing, you know, like, mm-hmm. People don't smoke pipes anymore.
I don't think so, I think it's like,
I have
some people.
I have a couple, I did a pipe for a little while, but it's such a high maintenance thing. That you just are like, yeah, no thanks. Like, you gotta carry around your works with you, and like, you gotta pack it, you gotta go. But I love the smell of pipe tobacco, so I had one for a little while. Now I burn incense in my old pipe bowl. But,
that works.
Yeah. But, it, yeah. To see it just as a commonplace thing, it is like, oh, that's such a weird, it's such an old school, it fits the era of this movie, but cozy is, I think, a really great word for it. I'm having trouble finding the right words for it. It feels
weird,
but like,
to be in a kid's
movie. It's a little odd to be in a kid's movie. I think especially today you look at it and you go, ooh, a lot of smoking in this movie, but.
And booze.
You have some booze in it, yeah. And reckless driving.
That as well.
But you can also tell your children, it's okay, they're British. Like, this movie's crazy British.
That's how the British are. Scotland Yard.
This movie's so British.
They speak solely British throughout this movie.
Yeah, like, that's right. But, yeah, like, the crooks are super British. Mm-hmm. And then they're watching that TV show, that game show of like, what's my crime? It's supposed to be like, what's my line?
I was going to say, like, is that a real thing? I don't even know.
No, there was a game show. It's called What's My Line. This is before my time even, but it was basically someone would come on and they had to guess what you did by asking you questions.
Okay, I've seen a newer version of that, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's probably been like brought back around, like Alec Baldwin probably hosts it or something, you know, like all those like Match Game and all these other old game shows that they bring back around. So yeah, I like that. I like the TV parodies and the dog food commercial that comes on the TV and all that stuff. I think that was clever.
I really liked the whole like opening 15-20 minute like sequence of like the dog kind of being the narrator and like,
oh yeah,
he's like, I'm the bachelor in the apartment, no, not the man, the dog.
I'm the one with four legs, and he's looking for ladies for them, and
yep, out the window at
all the
dog walkers,
the people look like their dogs, I loved all the sets of people looking like their dogs. Yeah,
no, I thought it was really cute. I was like, this is almost like like the beginning of Up, how it's so sweet and like charming.
It's not as emotional as the opening of Up.
It doesn't get as sad.
It is a great way to set up the movie and what's going on and who these, you know, who these people are, and you get their little meet cute in the park. But you were talking about the opening. I thought you meant like the opening credits sequence, because this is the other thing I like about these old movies is they put all their credits up front.
Yep.
And then the movie just ends. And this opening credit sequence, I think, is animated and drawn beautifully, to stay on the topic of art or come back to it. Like, I think it was actually like an entertaining opening title sequence.
I think so, yeah.
I think it looked great, yeah.
I personally am a big fan of the credits first.
Yeah, me too.
I wish so desperately.
Especially when they make a little movie like that, like a little entertaining thing. Yeah,
we need to go back to that, especially since like all the Marvel and Disney and whatever, all the mainstream movies now end with like really colorful credits and like, you know, they try to make it fun. And I'm like, just put that at the beginning. Ease us into the movie. And I feel like I would prefer that.
There is, I think, an issue with doing that now. Is that so many more people work on a movie now.
It's true.
You know, especially when you get into, like, all the CGI and special effects that go into, like, a Marvel movie.
Even you know, just, like, the list of location scout managers is, like, a mile long.
And soundtracks are, you know, you're putting full albums worth of credits for the music up there. It's very different now, and I think it's like, oh, now it would be like a 15-minute opening to the movie instead of, you know, three or four. But yeah, it's I think it is a little bit different. And every time you talk about how long credits are, I remember Amy Frost, our friend and former guest, the voice of reason on Ake Willow. She always says her parents both worked in television. And so as a result, she watches every credit after a movie, after a TV, like, just like, it's important to acknowledge the people who worked on this thing I enjoyed.
Good.
Which I think is so admirable. I will say I'm guilty of, I do not do that on a regular basis, but I think that is, I think that's super admirable.
I remember.
I think if we did put credits at the beginning, it forces people to look at it and acknowledge it all. Yeah.
I remember when I was in Canada, I was watching a movie on the TV and like the credits actually rolled and they played all of the credits and I had.
Oh, they didn't like shove them down in the bottom corner so they could start the next thing or put a commercial up there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I didn't even realize that was like weird to me until I saw it there. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, no.
Oh, this is how you're supposed to watch this. Yeah.
People like I thought that was a really cool thing.
Yeah. You have to talk about like the SAG and writer's strikes are constantly going on. I hope something in the new contract forbids network from doing that. Like, you're taking credit away from people when you minimize that screen to where they can't read who worked on the movie.
Right.
So you can get more ad revenue. You know, it's just sort of like, I would love to see something like that go into the, I know we're fighting bigger battles with the fight against AI and things like that, but
also
it is
a
just
valid
sort of
concern.
Like, I think it is valid. It's like, yeah. Yeah, you mandate that we credit these people, like, mandate that those credits are available to read, and don't say they're readable when they're shoved down in the bottom corner.
Let me get my magnifying glass and get up close.
But another early scene in this movie that I really enjoyed was when the puppies are being born, and Roger and Pongo are waiting, like, in the... I guess they're in the kitchen or something on the side.
It's kind of like not being in the delivery room. Like, you know, you're just kind
of
seeing.
Also
it.
A sign of the time where the father would not be in the delivery room. But the scene where the puppy, the maid brings out the puppy that's dead, that didn't make it.
Right.
And Roger brings it back to life. Just some sort of weird voodoo magic he was using. But
it looks like very poorly animated, like CPR.
Like massaging the, or warming it up or whatever. While that was happening, regardless of, the poor medical portrayal, the suspense of that, along with the art of that scene, what it looked like, I thought that scene was amazing. I thought that scene was legitimately beautiful. I was uplifting at the end of it. That's where this movie, I'm like, oh, this is a charming little movie. I hadn't seen this in years. And that's where it really, got a hook in me, where I'm like, oh, this scene was magnificent.
I was surprised that they would even go there.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, they're really going to kill
a
puppy.
It's a little bit dark. And then, I mean, it is sort of do you think that was trying to just say, hey, don't worry, all these puppies will be okay, because it's a kid's movie,
reassuring
to go, it's okay, everybody's gonna be okay.
But I'm not sure. But then they definitely have, I assume he's the one who's named Lucky.
That's what I assume, too.
The group.
Yeah.
He's kind of the runt of the litter, but he still made it.
But I don't know if this is a convention of modern movies or not. It's almost like you expect that because the odds were against this pup and he came back to life, that he would be the one to save the day. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Almost sort of like Chekhov's gun, kind of. Chekhov's puppy. Chekhov's Jesus puppy, the resurrected.
If you come back to life, it has to be for a reason.
It has to be for, but no, it's just sort of like, no, it's just sort of
to give us
hope. I guess, yeah, but it doesn't take anything away for me. It was a little bit surprising. You kind of expected that would have a plot payoff later on.
I didn't realize at this point in the movie that the dog is not going to give... I thought she was going to give birth to 101 Dalmatians.
I couldn't remember where they all came from either.
So I thought, oh, we're going to go all the way up to 100. And then they stopped at 15, and I was, really confused. But I was like, I'll go along with it. And then we just get 84 random dogs later on in the movie.
I couldn't remember either. Does she just have more litter? Are they like the Catholic dogs that just have an enormous dog family?
She keeps giving birth to new litters.
To 15 at a time. But nope, they just sort of ran into all these other dogs, which I think is probably a little better than...
I guess it makes
more
sense,
you just have your dogs getting it on through the entire children's movie. But... I couldn't remember where they stopped counting either for the, for all of that, but no, it all worked out.
Yeah.
And then you have so many dogs, you need a Dalmatian plantation, another sign of the times, just in that I don't think plantation in and of itself is a racist word, but it's a little bit of an uncomfortable word. I think
it's got a rough history in America.
Yes, a plantation is a farm. It's just a farm, but it's so often associated with our horrible past.
It's just so hard to rhyme with Dalmatian.
It is shocking to not shocking. It was a little surprising to hear it in the closing song.
I felt a little jarred by that.
Ooh,
maybe move somewhere else, buddy. I don't know.
I mean, they're in the UK.
It's true.
It's different there. Yeah.
Do they have farms in the UK? There's so little land. No.
Oh, the colonel lived on a farm. Come on.
I'm sure there's plenty of farms.
I did like their network of dogs as well.
Oh yeah, I thought all the dog characters were kind of sweet. And then there's the horse and the. The real hero of the story is that tabby cat.
Sergeant Tibbs. I think his name is. Yeah. He actually was.
He saved the day.
The cat was
numerous
great.
Numerous times.
The cast of dog characters is a lot like Lady and the Tramp has its entire cast of dog characters. It's just like the neighborhood dogs. I haven't seen Lady and the Tramp in a long time either.
Neither have I. That and Aristocats.
I've never seen the Aristocats. Yeah.
You guys never bought it for me, so I.
I've never seen it. Why would I buy it? I didn't know if it was appropriate for you or not. These are about cats who love jazz, and we all know what kind of cigarettes jazz cats are smoking. I'm not going to expose my children to that.
You really avoided that.
I'll let you find it all by yourself. The way God intended.
That did save me from the Siamese cats.
Oh, the Siamese cats
movie.
That
controversy.
I don't think it's quite as controversial as people.
I'm not sure.
Think it is. It's a little stereotypical. That's not. That's what you're getting into with 60s Disney.
And with cats or with like
sure
humanizing,
right?
Cats,
and,
I guess.
I
don't know.
I'm not saying
it's
not problematic through today's lens. I'm just I don't think it's. It's an easy movie to avoid if you don't want to see it,
the movie with talking animals I have the most experience with is the Air Bud series.
Oh yeah.
they made a bunch of like spin-offs with like the kids, like they had a litter of puppies and then
is it like Snow Buddies and stuff like that?
Yeah. Space Buddies, like literally like
I love that they went to space.
They literally went to space.
Things that all dogs do.
They became surfers or like every movie it was something else, but like
that's fantastic.
No, I did love those movies as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's appropriate to love those movies when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also that's kind of emulated here where like each dog is like a different, like you're the nerdy one. You're the angry one. You're the chubby one. Like
they all have
their own assigned personality.
And then the dogs in the neighborhood do as well. Like the Great Dane is very serious, kind of tough guy. And the Colonel, he's sort of like a crazy old, he reminds me of like the guy in Mary Poppins, like the old naval guy who has like a cannon on top of his house. And he's still like performing military drills on the, you know what I'm talking
just,
about?
Yeah. He's just old and kooky.
Just old and like still thinks the war is going on and things like that.
It's not all with it.
I liked those aspects. This is just a charming, I think, little movie. I think this is a great movie to show smaller kids, 5, 6, 7, I think would really enjoy this movie.
Yeah, they might be a little bored at first, but
sure.
It's one of those things, like, as a kid, I was bored by Bambi, but then I would, like, because it's not a big, like, dopamine fest, right?
Right.
It's not action, it's not heavy paced, but then you'd be like absorbed into the story, and then it's like it's a lesson for your
kids. Think this movie is good enough to look at and has enough like cute dogs in it to keep kids interested
and
but
it
you're right
stuff.
It's not like other movies of this era of like the I think the Jungle Book is a movie that's in constant motion.
That's true. Yeah,
Robin Hood has like action and fighting, and it's like a swashbuckling movie. And honestly, one of the kind of
it's pretty awesome.
It's
too.
A pretty great movie. Like that's the movie like my generation sort of goes like, oh, that's the Disney movie. Like it really is like a favorite of a lot of people my age.
It's a lot of people my age who love that movie.
Really? Did it kind of find legs? As it kept going?
It did. It also allegedly created a lot of furries.
That could be
a separate
that
issue.
That is the furry, ground zero for the furry explosion, isn't it? Oh my God.
I don't know if we can pin all of that on that.
I don't want to blame them for that, but, yeah. No, yeah, Robin Hood's great, though.
It's a solid movie.
It really is. And the casting of appropriate animals in that movie is, I think, there's a psychological paper that someone could write about that, you know, casting the right animal as the right character, you know, like
to fit the personality.
The fox is a thief, you know, and that's Robin Hood and things like that, you know, those kind of things.
Never really paid attention to it, but I'm sure there's like a lot of thought put
there's
into it.
There's a lot of great stuff there. And then, The Jungle Book was one that, was it you or Logan that was really into Jungle Book?
Logan really liked it, but I liked watching it too.
I really came to love The Jungle Book when you guys were small and it was on all the time here. I think The Jungle Book is another one that, it looks great. It has some of the best songs in it. And the character, the guy who plays the colonel in this, plays the elephant that like runs the military. The elephants are all like military.
Yeah.
And it runs that in The Jungle Book. A lot of these actors are through this era of
Disney. And he's
Disney.
So distinct. I remember exactly how he has a little
chant. He's got that.
That's great.
Grunt. And the woman who plays the maid in 101 Dalmatians is also in a bunch of Disney movies. She's in The Sword and the Stone, the King Arthur movie.
I never really saw that.
And she plays Mad Madam Mim, who's like the evil wizard, like the evil witch. There's like a wizard's duel in that. I have it on vinyl record.
Do you really?
I actually do, because that was a record that I had as a kid. And your mom and I were bouncing around shops in Charlotte County last year. And we went in this place that sold records, and I found that record in there, and I'm like, oh, I've gotta buy this thing. Yeah,
it's a pretty sweet.
It's a cool find. Yeah, when you find like a little kid's record like that, and it has
the one
side is the audio from The Sword and the Stone, the Wizard's Battle. It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
But yeah, that lady was in both of these. So that's Disney actors. They reuse a lot of them.
That's how it works.
Before we shut this down, we have to also point out we watched the Simpsons parody.
We did. We followed it right up with
excuse me. 2001 Greyhounds from season 6 of The Simpsons.
Because of course.
And I was happy that we did. I had not seen that episode in a long time. It has one of my favorite Simpsons jokes of all the entire series on it. It's great. Mr. Burns has a musical number.
Which is not a song from this movie.
It's from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. Completely threw me for a loop there.
But they also parody Lady and the Tramp in that. Parody a few things. Yeah.
They put all the things in there.
It's a big Disney parody. Yeah.
But yeah, you suggested that as a joke before we watched the movie. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then you did it.
It was a short movie. We could watch TV episode too.
Add 20 minutes in there, and it's still not even like the length of some of the movies we talk about on here.
But I don't want to do a full commentary on the Simpsons episode. You should, outside of saying, you should watch it if you haven't seen it or haven't seen it in a while.
It was funny, and it's older Simpsons, which is...
It's a great era of Simpsons, for sure. But also, like, I have to comment on that, and I know their greyhounds don't look like actual greyhounds, but those greyhound puppies are adorable. Like,
the Simpsons. They're very cute.
Somehow they just made them all look this perfect design of these pudgy little tiny dogs.
I want one for myself now.
I kind of do.
It's making me. I'm a cat person, but now I'm like,
oh, those pups. Oh, they're such a little Rory Calhoun.
Sure.
The way you stand up on two legs and do things.
I did not get that reference, which I think is the point of the joke.
Yeah, because some
Burns is so
very
old
obscure reference. Classic Burns. Yeah. Anyway, that's 101 Dalmatians. You got anything else to close out on?
Not really, other than, you know, look out for red paint, Cruella. Just because the anti-fur movement.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, PETA would hate Cruella de Vil.
Yes, but real point here, I do like that they kind of talk about that here. Like,
it's an anti-fur message.
Yeah. This is an anti-animal cruelty kind of story to get kids on, like, hey, isn't it messed up what we do to animals? Like,
that's right.
I think that's kind of cool. To have that message in a kid's movie.
But that's also, like, the parody of that in the Simpsons episode was, I'll never harm an animal as long as it's cute and can do tricks for me.
Should immediately cut to, like, eating a burger or something.
There's an old Dennis Leary bit in his first stand-up album about how we sort out the animals that we eat versus the animals that we want to save. And, you know,
it is true.
Anyway. Before we sidetrack again, let's close this out and go to shout outs.
Let's do it.
What do you got this week, Oz?
I just wanted to, like, promote this YouTube video by a YouTuber that I recently found. And I just think she's really funny. Her name's Jamie French, and she does a lot of, like, commentary, kind of just casual discussions where she kind of, like, lays out, like, internet controversy, which isn't even, like, a real thing, but she gets into, like, oh, these people are saying this, these people are saying this. This video is We Should Talk About Water Talk, and all it is, like, some crazy internet fad where people were, like, flavoring their water and, like, trying to hydrate more with, like, Kool-Aid kind of packets. And that became a big trend on TikTok. And then, because of course, something innocent and harmless and just, like, a weird goofy little thing made a lot of people really mad for no reason.
Because we need things to be mad at.
It turned into a controversy over whether or not it was considered water. And people just kind of lost their minds.
Of course.
And so she just kind of outlines, like, how silly people were being. And just, I find the way she, like, talks about it really funny.
Is she kind of like Sarah Zed? Like, in that she's commenting on like, a pop culture thing?
Yeah, it's just kind of laying out all the facts, kind of like,
yeah,
almost documentary style.
Yeah, I've watched some of Sarah Z's videos, and I find her, if I know what she's talking about, the thing that she's talking about, I find she does a really, really good job of that.
I listen to her even when, like, I have
sometimes
no idea
I'll just turn it on, like, and just because I think she's informative, and but I don't get all the jokes if I don't know the thing sometimes. But
that's true.
I think she is actually really good at just outlining factually what this thing is.
Yeah, in an
essay style.
I like break down videos in general of topics. So check out Jamie French.
I will, because TikTok trends, they're just always the worst.
They're always the weirdest thing. They last 5 days.
Yeah, and everyone's outrageously upset. The only ones I'll take that back, because I spent an embarrassing amount of time watching the Grimace Shake videos.
That was funny.
I was telling your mom about them, and she hadn't seen them. I go, oh, and I dialed them up on YouTube. You know, they put, like, a compilation together.
Yeah.
And I started watching, and it just kept going. And I'm laughing at all of them. And then I looked, I'm like, oh my God, this thing is, like, 20 minutes long. The Grimace Shake videos are, I don't know where that trend came from, but it's pretty funny. Like, some of them are really, really funny.
Dad watched an 8-hour video of that.
I did not watch the entire 20-minute video, but I did watch more of them than I probably should have.
Captivated.
I really was.
Is that what you're shouting out today?
I am not. As we are recording this episode, we are on the heels of the passing of Paul Reubens, Pee-wee Herman.
That's right.
And I wanted to shout out this New York Times article I found. There was a lot of great tributes to him this week. And I legitimately think Paul Reubens and his Pee-wee character were just legitimate creative genius. I think he was insanely unique in a time. He was doing things in a time that other people were not doing. It was if you watch his HBO show, if you watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure, still one of the funniest movies, and you know, a great partnership with Tim Burton. But this article is from The New Yorker, and it is called The Preposterous Grace of Paul Reubens, and it talks about how he was making a children's show that was sort of a self-aware parody of mid-century kid shows from like the 50s and 60s, like Howdy Doody. But also, he was making a genuine version of that show, like a sincere mm-hmm. version of that same kind of show, and how he collaborated with so many great artists and like Gary Panter, who's like a underground comic artist, did a lot of design, character design and stuff on that show. Lawrence Fishburne was Cowboy Curtis on that show. He brought in like really diverse and interesting and creative people to build this show that was a parody of a thing and also a genuine version of the thing. And they talk about the influence of that and how that's what this summer's big hit, Barbie, is the same thing. And they're saying maybe Barbie doesn't exist without something like Pee-wee's Playhouse to have a template for how to parody and sincerely do something at the same time, and what a jungling act that is. It's a really great article. It is sort of outlining his career a little bit and some background into, you know, how really smart and unique what he was doing really was, and how it has influenced people going forward. Natasha Lyonne, you know her from Poker Face?
Yeah.
A new show. She was on Pee-wee's Playhouse. She was one of the kid actors on there. I had no idea. And she, it mentions her in there. Aww. And she had talked about how, like, yeah, I was a child actor. It was, like, her first credit. And she's like, and we remained friends. Like, all, you know, he kept in touch with people that he worked with. It was just, anyway, it's a really great article. I'll have a link to that and the one on Anime Wong. Both in the show notes for you to read. I recommend both of those and Austin's video about water talk. I am somehow, I cannot wait to watch that video because I don't know anything about this trend, and I know it will infuriate me to learn about it, and I will also laugh at them.
Stay tuned for Dad's reaction
for my
to
breakdown.
That.
Yes. Anyway, on that note, we want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show. If you enjoy it, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility. It helps us grow the show.
That's right. Another way to help us grow the show is to tell your friends about us. If you can't do that, talk to your dog
or bark to your nearest neighborhood dog, and they'll send it down the line.
Exactly. If you tell your dog, all the dogs are
all the dogs will know. That's right.
And that's how we'll spread our show around town.
Yes. That is what we'll do. Austin, you have the wheel next week.
I do.
What will we be watching?
I decided that I want to watch Jaws.
So, the original.
Yes.
Awesome.
Is there another one? I mean, there's sequels.
I mean, yeah, I was just, yeah, the very first, yeah.
Yeah, no.
And still the best.
Because it's just been a long time since I've seen it, and it was in the $5 bin at Walmart the other day, so.
God.
I now own Jaws.
Giving away something amazing. $5. That's a bargain.
There it was.
You'll never get more movie for your dollar than that.
It's true. Not sponsored. But, yeah.
Hey, spoiler alert. I love Jaws. I unapologetically love every frame of that movie. Yeah.
I've heard it's really great.
Have you never seen it?
No, I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't, like, enamored with it, but I was also kind of young, so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll talk about it.
I'm curious to see what my rewatch will be.
Great. I'm already looking forward to this.
Perfect.
All right. Jaws, next week. Until then, Austin, if the people want to get a hold of us, how do they do that?
Well, you can shoot us an email at austinandphil@gmail.com. Where else can they find us?
Letterboxd, Austin N. Rude and Phil Rude. Those are our respective Letterboxd accounts. You can find out what we're watching there. You can see on mine, I have a list of everything we've watched for this show. You can go through and check them off your list and make sure you've seen everything.
Sweet.
Cool. Well, Oss, you want to read the credits?
Yeah, we did it all ourselves.
There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.